2, and you are tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris, and in the studio with me, I have Cop Watch Jake, as I call him, although he probably doesn't call himself that. Tonight, actually, you're having a meeting of Cop Watch, and we can set you up with a microphone that works. And we'll be talking to you soon. Lots of things on the agenda for tonight. We don't have the staff report here of the Tuesday City Council meeting coming up on July 23rd, though it has. It was published late in the day, and I didn't get to the office, the City Council offices, in order to get it. But I will have it on Sunday, and it should be online probably tomorrow or Saturday for those of you who want to look it up online. And what you'll primarily see is the same thing as you saw 2 weeks ago or a week ago, rushing these infamous anti-homeless downtown laws through. You know, no sitting on the sidewalk from either 12 or 14 feet from a building, no peaceful signing or panhandling within similar location distances, which make it very difficult to do any of that stuff. New laws that deputize, in essence, CSOs and hosts to give warnings, so that, again, a whole bunch of laws focusing on poor and homeless people that the merchants simply want to divorce themselves from and essentially discourage from being anywhere near their stores. These are billed as conduct ordinances, but they have nothing to do with conduct or in terms of these criminal conduct. There's nothing criminal in leaning against a building, sitting on the sidewalk, or peacefully asking for spare change. Or is there, if you violate merchant ethics and fears about being a grubby person in their vicinity? I guess that merely existing is a crime, and that, of course, is the case in countries or cities all over the country, and it's now the case in Santa Cruz, has been for a while, actually. Now it's coming forth as a series of rushed laws. We've talked about that a lot in the last few weeks. We're going to talk about that more. I'm going to play you some more snaps and bits and snips and pieces from the Sacramento rally, the rally there to establish the right for homeless people to legally sleep and to eliminate laws against sleep in city after city in California, which are, of course, hate crimes, which we went to Sacramento to do. We haven't had any word from the governor yet that he's about to pick up this agenda, but a lot of people we talked to agreed with us, and I hope that a lot of you listeners agree with us, and we'd like to know from you. I would at least like to know those who are being given the big hassle or the ticket from local police authorities for the crime of simply trying to sleep. I was in the courthouse yesterday, ran into activist and homeless resident Ed Howes, who was getting the royal runaround from the court authorities in the basement. And we've talked a little bit about some of these technical things, but the long and the short of it is that you don't want referee Mulligan to take your case, and he generally takes any infraction cases that come down the road, whether they're sleeping ban cases or minor offenses in other areas, unless you strike him out, unless you disqualify him. And to do that, you simply are supposed to be able to go to the window in the basement of the county building during the office hours and say, hey, I've got a citation, and you show your citation number, you give your name, and say, I'd like to have this referee disqualified, and I want to send it to another court. It'll go into the courts of Commissioners Siegel or Joseph. Well, Howes was being told by the good clerks that he had to fill out legal forms to do that, and he didn't know what the hell they were talking about. They told him to go to the law library down the hall. The law library didn't know what he was talking about, and in essence, what they were doing was they were raising another barrier to the disqualification of Mulligan, who's hobbling around these days on a crutch. I saw him in the hallways and greeted him again, as I usually do, with resign, please, referee Mulligan. Let's get somebody in there who actually will give the law a fair reading, not say, for example, the opening, now, officer, will you state the facts in the case? Or deny people their misdemeanor rights, their right to, let's say, have a jury trial, the right to be informed, the right to a public defender, and so forth. Mulligan is a regular practitioner of this kind of covering up of the rights of people, in essence denying them. So I generally recommend that, and for other reasons, he be disqualified. He's an amiable enough fellow as a person, but as a judge, he's simply unfair. And that's why I've suggested people do that. And a lot of people do that, and apparently now they're going to make it more difficult. If you want to disqualify him, you disqualify him under CCP, that's Code of Criminal Procedure 170.6. Pretty easy to remember, 170.6, which essentially is the code that says you all have, any individual who is accused of a crime has one disqualification, which doesn't have to be for a cause, as they say. You don't have to prove that he's prejudiced. You just have to believe that he's prejudiced. Anyway, I met Ed there to try to assist him because they were not letting him do this. And we brought along Chris, who's a volunteer attorney in this matter, who's appealing the Camp Paradise case and also taking my obstructing the sidewalk case, where I was essentially tabling around Alibaba's Cafe in Sushi Now way back in January, and was stolen away from the table, kidnapped by officer, actually Sergeant Baker, and his blue-bellied brigade, who came in and snatched me, my tape recorder, and hauled me off to the police station on complaint from Matisse Selman of Sushi Now, who is one of the two kiosk owners, one of those two folks who put in the grisly green fence that now takes up more than half the sidewalk and is actually the true obstruction in that area. Anyway, so I noticed while I was in the court basement yesterday that two more camping cases have showed up on the court calendar. Two more custody cases. That means they were dragged in. Actually, they may not have been custody because I didn't actually get into court, but they were also being charged with failure to appear. And that usually means that they forgot they had a ticket or they declined to pay any attention to it, having more important things to do like survival or whatever else they were doing. And they are charged now with not making a court date, which is a misdemeanor. Those are the things that Mulligan usually fails to tell you you have a right to a jury trial on, and insists, well, if you plead guilty to the camping case, I'll drop the failure to appear, is what he's often said. What he should say is, you have a right to a jury trial on the failure to appear in the camping case is an infraction. And I've never heard of a failure to appear being prosecuted, by the way, in this county, although it's conceivable they could do it, because they don't want to impanel a jury for that purpose. Usually they plea bargain it or dismiss it. But at least you get out of Mulligan's court, and you wouldn't have to disqualify him to do that, because if you are doing a jury trial, he can't do jury trials in the basement. He's an infraction judicial officer. He cannot even hear them. So it would go up to another court, and then you could disqualify one of them if you felt those judges were unfair or you wanted a real judge. Real judges being judges other than commissioners that usually these cases go to once you've disqualified Mulligan. While that's a little confusing, I can appreciate that. But the basic rule is disqualify John Mulligan, or Meat Grinder Mulligan, as we call him, because he tends to churn out fines like sausage meat. He is a fine machine for the county and city. And it ain't fine, but he's a fine machine, I'll tell you. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. And as I said, I have a guest in the studio. We're going to be talking with him shortly, since he's going to zip off to another meeting, perhaps, that's happening. I'm not sure if he's actually going to do that. That's the Coalition for a Community Commons. Greg Kindig and others, Amy Courtney, Cassandra Brown, I believe, are part of that coalition. I don't know if Amy and Cassandra are around. I think they're on vacation, but Greg is, and he spoke at the last city council meeting, as did Jacob here, and as I did. And they're going to be meeting at the Hub, which I think I have the address to. I think I even put it on one of these flyers. It's about a block from City Hall, and the meeting runs from 6 to, I think, 7:30 or 8, and it's open to the public. And I encourage people to wander on down there and check it out. Often the case, I never have the right flyers when I'm looking for them. Actually, fire, but the right one. This is enough to make you want to turn in your radio combination. Yeah. Well, try to find out where the hub is. It's where the bike shop is. It's where the old meeting place for a lot of activist organizations used to be. And bike church, I'm told, and I'm reminded by my colleague here where it used to be. And who knows, maybe next time I'll actually have the proper flyer, which actually has the name printed on it. A lot of flyering and petitioning was done downtown today by the group I'm calling Downtown for All. They haven't really adopted a name yet, but I think that's what they do, and that's what they're pushing. And they're pushing a petition that I assisted in writing called Downtown for Everybody, or Everyone. And I encourage you to go down and sign it, and also to sign up to be of assistance in the kinds of organizing and protest work that we're going to have to be doing over the next couple months to not just turn back these nasty ordinances that are almost, without a doubt, going to be rubber-stamped at City Council on Tuesday, but to establish a kind of a new system downtown that respects homeless people, that respects the other groups of people down there, that respects the residents, that respects the merchants as well, but that essentially provides fair dealings for everyone. And this is can only happen if people get together and organize and stand together to resist essentially a kind of merchant monopolization of the space and a series of police-generated ordinances that quite obviously discriminate and set up a system of selective enforcement where police can go after individuals they don't like, and merchants can remove largely homeless and young people from their vicinity, regardless of the supposed right of all of us to use the public sidewalks. So that's what we're going to be looking at, and actually with some tabling done down there today, and I'm going to play a few interviews from that, and then we're going to go directly into some live discussions with Jacob, who's later having a cop watch meeting at Loudon Nelson Park, I believe, at 8:30 this evening. Maybe he'll be talking about that. And like that. If you want to call in at any point, the call-in number here is 427-3772.
It's around 1:40. We're in front of the Palomar Hotel. Theoretically, within 10 feet of the building because of the overhang of the Palomar Inn, if you want to consider this entire area Palomar property. Of course, we know the whole thing belongs to those with money, so why kid around? We're also next to the Hat Company, and with me is Uncle Jim and the Bishop Copwatch Jacob, who's extending his evil domain downtown at this table. How's it been going? You've been here since noon. That's almost 2 hours.
It's been going pretty well. You know, we've had a good amount of public support. A lot of people that really had no idea of anything that was going on, or maybe had heard a little brief snippet, but really didn't know the full impact that that these ordinances would be having upon street musicians and performers, and upon political activists like us right here tabling.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, there has been quite a bit of positive support. We've just been talking to people about the ordinances and letting them know about the upcoming demonstrations. The main one, of course, being Tuesday at 3 p.m. at the city hall, which is 809 Center Street, and that'll be just kind of a massive civil disobedience. We're gonna have a lot of performers there. And activists voicing their dissent.
You mean perhaps civil resistance, not necessarily violating any law. Here's the police chief. Perhaps you can get him to sign our petition.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Maybe you'd like to take a look at the literature. Let's see.
Steve, we have a petition here. The police chief here, gentlemen. This is the man who gave us the downtown ordinances. Let's have a round of applause for Steve Belcher. No sitting on the sidewalk. No sports downtown. No asking for any kind of spirit change after dark. So a police officer has arrived. It's 2 o'clock, and the sign RAP, Street Artists and Musicians, it says on Pacific Avenue.
Out of curiosity, right around the corner, we saw a number of different types of advertising things that Emergence had put out on the streets in what was designated public space. Is that something that, I mean, that's illegal.
No,
why aren't they being hassled?
You can't use
this is illegal too, I guess. Sorry about that. We'll take this down. But is not that illegal as well for those merchants to be having their signs out in what is supposed to be designated as public space, not private property?
No.
Okay.
What code section, Wendy, do they adhere to in that? You know, because they are using public property.
Right, but they're using the property designated for their businesses. Okay, so they're allowed to have their planters out, they're allowed to have their railings out, and they can, as far as I know, have their signs that say, like this sign right there.
Actually, we're talking about I guess it's called the Toy Maker or something. It's right down from the falafel place. They have a table with a bunch of toys on it, actually on this side of the sidewalk, the opposite side from the store.
I haven't seen it today.
When you walk by, you probably may notice it. And then beyond that is a sign for a second business, which again is not immediately in front of the business. It is like out near the sidewalk. And I'm just,
yeah. I've asked them to move. I actually have asked several businesses to move their signs closer to the building so that it's not impeding.
Right, you might
walk away.
I'm not trying to, you know, to harass those businesses. I'm trying to understand what the standard is.
Right. Well, I'll go down and check it out.
Oh.
I would be better informed if discussing it.
If you do any handcuffing, I want to observe.
All right, I'll try and keep my handcuffing to a minimum.
Thank you, Officer Brown.
Jim, you were watching Wendy yesterday. What did you see?
Well, she was with three other female officers down in front of Jackson.
Three or two?
Three other ones. There were four of them in front of Jackson's for an hour and a half at least, around 1 o'clock to 2:30.
Right.
Then she split off, and she went down here and stood for well over an hour in front of the coffee shop here.
Starbucks,
and spoke with the man who came up on a Harley with his pipes loud. She said nothing about that. And finally, after a long time of talking to him, people were riding behind her on bicycles, on skateboards, all kinds of stuff was going on. She did not look away. She was focused on him. She talked to him. She shook his hand.
Maybe he was good looking.
What? Maybe
you know, some,
he was
I guess,
looking.
Police officers meeting individuals.
Well,
now, come on.
She was enraptured.
Well, how come she never hugs me?
Yeah, I know.
I didn't
hug him. She shook his hand.
Right.
She was very formal. So then...
And these were conversations. You're listening to Gentleman Jim, who's was helping to do some tabling today down on the mall at the, what I call, Downtown for All table in front of the Hotel Palomar near the Hat Company. In the studio with me, why don't you sign in there, Jacob? Just who are you, and where do you come from? What's your deal, man?
Well, where do I come from? I've been just living in this town for probably about 6 months. I came from Reading, did a lot of activist work there, and have been trying to get acquainted here and get some things going.
Now let me interrupt you
in
just sort of
here.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you right away because I got a phone call coming in, and I also want to find out. You apparently talked to Wendy Bynes, the officer we spoke with, about those strange businesses that were placing obstructive commercial objects on the sidewalk and what happened. But before we find out, let's see what this caller has to say.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
And who is this?
It sounded like you were hitting on that good-looking police officer with that big old baton.
Well, my baton is bigger than her baton. Well, perhaps not.
Oh, man. Hey, I was down at the homeless center today.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't heard you mention, but I was told by a woman down there that they're going to build like a giant office, I don't know, a bunch of buildings down there, $5 million on the cost, and it's being donated by well-to-do people that want to contribute.
Actually, I think you're talking about the family center, which I'm not aware.
It.
Wait a minute, I'm not aware that they actually have the money to build it yet. Instead, what they're going to do is, on September 1st, they're going to begin to destroy the offices that they were allowing the Santa Cruz Service Corps to use on the corner of River and Coral Streets. So in order to prove their proceeding, they're not going to be building anything. They're just going to be destroying a building. It's. I could be wrong about this, and my information, no doubt, is incomplete. But anyway, go ahead with what you're saying.
Well, I was kind of shocked because I hadn't heard from you. And she's claiming in November they start building constructing buildings, and something like in the line of $5 million worth, and it's being donated by people, somewhat well-to-do people that actually, want to give back to the poor. And I thought, damn, I started getting some hope, and I said, Ed, forget it. You seen stuff that sounds good, looks good on paper, and then when it gets down to the getting down, nothing happens, right? But call me bitter and jaded, Robert. But
well, you have been doing your round delay in the courts. We talked about you a little earlier in the hour. Did you hear us, our discussion?
Yeah, I heard Ed mention. That's all I heard, because Leo had to go do a big, giant defecation. That's not painting a pretty picture, I know. But,
well, you're part of the problem downtown, Ed. I hope you're using the well-funded Emily Riley Memorial restrooms that have been set up all over the area.
Yeah, nice things to eat.
People
are good doing good things behind the scenes.
Emily Riley was part of a task force that was supposed to set up bathrooms, but as she finally explained, for the first time in public ever, at the last council meeting, they found that the bathrooms were too expensive to put up, so instead they left these cheesy porta-potties up. Actually, they put up five. They've taken down two.
Well, cheesy porta-potty is better than no porta-potty.
Well, that's true, but there aren't any porta-potties in the camping zones where people need them most. And
yeah,
Emily knows this, but is actually, not only has she done nothing about it, she's taken no action as a council member to reconstitute the bathroom task force for the last year. Now, at the last council meeting, as she told us, she was going to go after homeless people downtown with these new anti-homeless ordinances, she threw in a little bit of sugar by saying that she was also going to look for some, she was going to reestablish the Crone Crapper Commission, as we call it, which is supposed to look into porta-potties and bathrooms and try to get something done there. All this because you had to mention you were taking a dump.
No, that was my dog.
Your dog was taking a dump?
Yeah, I meant to paint a pretty picture,
I see. So when is you're going to be taking a camping ticket to court.
Yeah.
When is that going to happen, Ed?
I'd rather not say.
We want you to know.
Down the road.
Well, is there, okay, we want the public to know so they can come to this case. Now, I guess your initial arraignment is not so important, but the trial, I think, a week later is. So we know that you're going to cause a major stir in the centers of power with your...
Well, not that you've not now that you've mentioned it over the air.
My van is my home.
Because they are listening.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Robert, it gave me some hope, and I got to thinking, the jaded, bitter head, I thought, they're claiming it's going to happen. $5 million, and they're going to build like 2- and 3-story buildings for, I don't know, maybe I got it kind of mixed up, but hopeful, Robert.
You're mixed up, buddy.
It's a family
shelter that they're supposedly going to be building there for 20 or 30, I'm not sure if it's people or families. And, it's a drop in the bucket, but it's certainly better than nothing.
The
problem is it's not dealing with the biggest homeless problem, which has to do with single males and also just people generally, like those who need a low-income campground.
Didn't sound too good as mowing down that
such as was
building.
Available back in 1994-95 at the so-called Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
Right.
And they have the resources, they have the facility. It would be much cheaper to build. It wouldn't cost $5 million. A couple hundred thousand would do it. But, these people don't want to shelter homeless people because they have the idea, this ancient medieval idea, that, you want to get the Jews out of town.
Yeah.
It's just like
it's
the English kings. English kings and the Spanish Inquisition, they don't like the Jews. Yeah. I'm not saying they don't care. We're not talking about the Jews. I'm really kind of setting an example that the Jews are being treated in a fashion. Homeless people are the modern day Jews or blacks, and they're being treated in the same
fashion. Well, you had an intelligent man on. He said, well, why, if it was like a certain skin color type people, if they were doing it to, everybody'd be out there with their brother protesting, right? Because it was a minority, but therefore they're homeless, so therefore it's okay today.
Yeah, and that's, of course, but there are plenty of people, I think, who are sympathetic to, the realities of this, to see past these stereotypes that the Sentinel likes to scream about and see past
the new Jews,
the fatuous smiles of Emily Riley and the pompous ignorance, what I call it, of Ed Porter. And I suppose some people will say I'm being personal in these comments, but I really, that's my impression of how these individuals are behaving at City Council on homeless issues. And
well, let me personally rudely interrupt you.
Please.
The buildings sound great. It really does. It gives me hope, and I know better. I shouldn't have any hope on it, but anyway, it didn't sound good as mowing down the building there. It just didn't sound right. That's a nice old home, huh? It's a nice old building. anyway.
Well, it's being used. It's being used, although to some extent it's been taken over by Camp Paradise and Paul Lee, and unfortunately one faction, where most of the homeless people who were being served in the Camp Paradise situation were expelled and evicted because they wanted a different system of organization than Larry Templeton being sort of the supreme leader. And Paul Lee decided to put all his money on Larry, and I think Larry should be able to lead a camp, and I applaud that. But I do think that the Santa Cruz Service Corps needs to be a group that covers many different groups of homeless people in encampments. At least that's how Tom Shaver built it. That's what their constitution said, and that's not what happened. Unfortunately, now that building is just... Well, actually, there is to some extent, I guess, a rapprochement happening. And some people from Camp Hope are using it, some people from Camp Paradise,
And
that's better than nothing. But that'll end on September 1st. It'll be torn down, I understand.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm a kind of like a sensor, a vibe feeler. You know, I walked through there today, you know, and I had to do something, and it's kind of like, there's good souls, man. There's good people there. You know, there's people with problems. That's a definite, right? And
you're talking about the homeless resource center?
Yeah. Some AA meetings would help, you know, and who knows, maybe they are going, you know, but, they're not bad people. I mean, you know, in this type of economy, not everybody's going to fit in, right? There's not enough room for everybody, you know, and people are down and out, and they've been kicked and kicked and kicked out and repeatedly, right? And therefore, after a while, you are a product of your experiences, right?
Hear anything about Homes on Wheels, by the way?
No, I'm out of contact with that.
Well, if anybody out there who is in a vehicle or is living outside, you know, wants to kind of reestablish contact and start working on, you know, the kinds of organizations that might come together in this issue, just give a call to Huff at 423-4833, 423-HUFF.
Good. Yeah. Well, you know, it would be nice, you know, and I've mentioned to you before countless times, it seems like, that there's got to be acres and acres and acres of land donated to the city and the county, that something could be done where we could park on it, right? Build some real cheap, cheesy, you know, cinder block bathrooms, you know, type things where you can't break any fixtures, everything's fine, and, you know, it could be done, but, you know, I don't know. Until more of their kids become homeless or whatever, and they start to see how, you know, it hits their own family, then they'll maybe want to do something, eh? I got to get going.
Hey, thanks, Ed.
Thank you, Robert.
All righty.
Bye.
And phone lines are open at 427-3772, 427-3772 here at Free Radio. I'm Robert Norse, and in the studio with me, the notorious Cop Watch Jake, who is on the other mic. Are you still with us there, Jake?
I am. Am I still audible?
I think you're still audible.
Good stuff.
Today is July 18th. It's John Henrik Clark, African-American historian, scholar, and activist, was born. This is also U.S. Railroad Day, for all of you who've forgotten that. That's the day the Grand Trunk Line was completed in 1853. For all you train hoppers, check that out. In 1610, master painter of street life, an Italian named Caravaggio died. In 1870, infallibility was declared for the Catholic Pope. That reassures all of us. In 1922, philosopher of science Thomas Kuhn was born in Cincinnati, Ohio. And in 1969, Ted Kennedy offered Mary Jo Kopechne a lift home at Chappaquiddick in Massachusetts. Some rather tawdry facts from the Autonomedia calendar of Jubilee Saints, which... It's got some pretty interesting information. This today doesn't seem terribly interesting. We've got stuff about, last time we talked about a little about Woody Guthrie. It's got Nikola Tesla, Bill Kunstler this month, C.P. Gilman, Patrice Lumumba, naming some of the more famous people you might have heard of, Ida P. Wells, France Fanon, Ernest Hemingway, Richard Stein, George Grosz, Amelia Earhart, and so forth. I've actually... ordered some calendars from these folks, and I haven't heard a damn thing from them. I may have to call up Steve Belcher, our police chief, and try to get him to investigate. Anyway, today is also Cop Watch Meeting Day. With all these meetings happening this week, Jacob, you've been doing this attempt to pull together this Downtown for All group, and you got some protests planned. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, yeah. Tomorrow we're going to have a demonstration out front of Jackson Shoes. Of course, Jackson Shoes was the initial merchant, or Candy Jackson, to create the Jackson Shoe Petition, which is what has influenced strongly these new downtown ordinances. So while she's not the main focus, or rather, you know, her business is not the main focus, we'll be out front of there. And we're going to be doing some more tabling, as well as some demonstration regarding these new ordinances. And so that'll be at 2 p.m. in front of Jackson's Shoes. And really, that is to help raise publicity and awareness about the issue, as well as getting people to come to the demonstrations Tuesday, the 23rd at 3 p.m., when the city council will be making their decisions about these ordinances. And
a word about that, Jacob. I actually called the city council clerk, one of the staff there, and I wasn't able to get the promised television audio videotape of the last council discussions, and hopefully that'll be able to get that tomorrow and play it for listeners on Sunday, or at least some of it, so they can review some of the testimony. Not that it makes a lot of difference, since the city council didn't seem too interested in any of the testimony, though they referred to it briefly at different points. I did learn that the actual ordinances will be returning in the evening session immediately after oral communications, which usually takes up half an hour. So probably around 7:30 or 7:45, the ordinances will be returning. Now, you're still planning these protests from 3 to 6, right, Jacob?
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to start at 3, and we'll see what happens. This whole thing is, we haven't had very much time in the way these ordinances has been rushed through, since they have been, you know, looked at as just adjustments and clarifications, and have really tried to railroad this through. We haven't had much time, so the demonstration is kind of ad hoc, but there are going to be a lot of people showing up. We've been tabling and gotten a lot of press releases out. The demonstration is going to be pretty unorthodox. It's really going to be a lot of the musicians and street performers. Talked to people that said they were going to come and do a theater. It's going to be interesting. We don't really know exactly what's going to happen, but we'll be chalking and just having a good time out front of there, and letting people know that we do not accept that panhandlers or that street performers or virtually anyone else should be criminalized for using public space on Pacific Avenue, which is what's going to be occurring. We don't know whether or not they're going to choose 12 feet from every building or an entrance, or 14 feet, but what it'll amount to is virtually one whole side of Pacific Avenue being completely unavailable for political tablers, for panhandlers, or for street musicians and performers, and really just a very, you know, thin, paltry strip on the other side, and this is what's supposed to be, you know, public space, and this is what people really come to Santa Cruz for. I mean, a lot of people really believe that. I mean, they don't come here for another sterile suburb of San Jose, but
according to the proposed ordinance, which may be modified, though, the way it's looking, they aren't, you know, they want to get away for their summer recess. This is the last council meeting until the second week in September. And Emily Riley and Ed Porter, the two individuals who are pushing this, the two council members, seem particularly eager to rush through two committee meetings in 1 week and then two council meetings in essentially 2 weeks. Actually, it'll be three council meetings in 3 weeks that they will have done. A council meeting on July 9th, a council meeting on July 15th, and a council meeting on July 23rd. That's three council meetings in 3 weeks. 1 week apart. Usually council meetings are 2 weeks apart. And they also, of course, had the last one was a special afternoon session. Usually what they do in readings of laws that are going to be changed get changed at the first reading. In other words, the city attorney and the staff prepare the laws, and it gets 72-hour notice. People look at it, and they come into the first reading, and then they propose their concerns, and council members then make some legal changes, which requires that there be two more readings. That comes back a second time and then a third time. For it to be changed at the second reading will again require two more readings, and is rather unusual for it to be changed at the second reading. There have been cases where the laws have been dumped at a second reading. Very rare. That happened in the case of the musicians back in the drummers back in 1996, and they whipped the police department apparently whipped together an ordinance to drive the drummers off of Pacific Avenue because of some complaints from residents, some of them perhaps legitimate. And the drummers came in great numbers to the second city council meeting. Huge numbers of drummers from the university, from the coast, from different cities. And the city council just was really baffled. They didn't know what to do. And Tom Noddy and I spoke, and Tom Noddy is the bubble blower who was instrumental way back 21 years ago in helping get together the street performers' guidelines. Those are the voluntary guidelines that street performers often accept, where they agree to rotate from on blocks and so forth. And there's also sort of a voluntary agreement by the merchants. They agree to give the street performers an hour. Even if you don't like them, let them stay there for an hour and hope he moves along after informing him you really would like him to move after an hour. And you give somebody else a chance and give the merchant a chance to have a little, you know, another performer there at least. So, you know, go somewhere else. Now, you don't have to go off the mall. You just move a little further away or to another place for the time being. You can even come back, but, you know. And this has kind of worked, although when it doesn't work, you know, both sides are free to use ordinances and say, one can say, that's my constitutional right, and the other can say, it's, you know, you're doing excessive noise, and they can fight it out legally. Usually it's not really a fight because the cops tend to favor one side in this dispute. Anyway, back in 1996, on this rare occasion of her second reading, the drummers in their great numbers produced the great master of repression, Mike Rotkin, who's now running for city council again. He's a so-called socialist from the university who's sort of I call him a sofa bed socialist. He's never had any concern for civil rights for homeless people on the streets, and he's always supported the sleeping ban. But he and Kennedy were so kind of overwhelmed with these drummers that they said, well, maybe we can have the drummers work out an agreement, and they withdrew their ordinance. It was very unusual. But there was such a broad community of drummers, and these were drummers who were not just street performers, but they were, you know, middle-class drummers and drum instructors and folks from many different social classes. So one of the problems we've had with the downtown ordinances here, the new downtown ordinances, the Emily Riley ordinances, or I should call them the Steve Belcher ordinances, he's our police chief, has been we don't have social service providers talking about how this is going to criminalize homeless people. We don't have religious leaders talking about how this shows a really vicious kind of discrimination against, I mean, the right to beg, for example. You have the right to beg. It's not something that's, you know, that all of us like, you know, like to deal with. I don't like to deal with it. I'm as tight as they come. But it's one of those things that unfortunately is a reality in our society. But those folks are not haven't been at the city council meetings, and I don't know if they're coming, because I think they are intimidated. If you look, for example, in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, you'll see an article about how a business down near the Homeless Resource Center is talking about how he finds crap and piss and vomit on his balcony. And again, there's no bathrooms open down near the Homeless Resources Center at night. That is a sad fact of life, and you would think that that would be the most immediate thing that might be mentioned, but dear Dan White, our white boy reporter from the Santa Cruz Sentinel, just for some reason fails to mention that fact. So instead, the guy is talking about building a huge fence, or he wants a law that will require homeless people to stay 6 feet away from his building, or something like this. I actually don't specific article with me at the moment. Maybe I do, and I can find it. But it would be nice to see somebody like Ken Cole, who gets paid a nice salary for his Homeless Resource Center work, to, you know, toddle his tight little butt down to the Santa Cruz City Council and start talking about basic civil rights for homeless people, because they are, after all, his clients. Or is it that he's fundamentally, you know, concerned about what his board of directors wants, and his board of directors includes cops, judges, and merchants, who actually just built the Homeless Resource Center not so much to help homeless people as to get them the fuck out of town. That's what the Homeless Resource Center was built to do, to stop the homeless protests that were going on downtown. It also had the secondary purpose of, yeah, they set up some lockers so they could, cause they could more credibly claim with these new laws that they started essentially doing this practice of seizing homeless property, well, from the day the first homeless person showed up. But now they have a law coming up on Tuesday that will make so-called unattended property immediately subject to seizure. It has to be right now an obstruction. After Tuesday, I should say a month after Tuesday, which is when all the laws will go into effect if they're passed for the second reading unchanged, then all it has to be is homeless property sitting on the sidewalk. Well, as I said, this homeless resource center provides lots of lockers, although not a lot of lockers, really. I understand there's waiting lines for the lockers. I'm not sure about the immediate situation at the moment, but generally is a great shortage of lockers. But the homeless resource center served both the merchants and the homeless people to some extent by relocating all homeless people during the day, during those key tourist hours, to an area that is somewhat removed from the downtown, though not far enough away for people like Steve Hartman and other critics, and some of the Take Back Our Towners, as they call them, who want the homeless completely driven out of town and, you know, dumped on the hillside, you know, 5 miles around the bend somewhere. So it's kind of a NIMBY situation, not in my backyard, and it's a hard situation to fight. I was talking with you about it earlier, Jacob. You pointed out what one of our activist friends has said is that, you know, one good thing to focus on is it not only affects homeless people, but it affects street performers and street musicians who most of us have believed are a real draw. They draw tourists to Santa Cruz, where they can occasionally zip into the stores and buy some noxious knickknacks, as are sold by the fine merchants of Santa Cruz. What's your thought on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I definitely believe that kind of almost bohemian kind of nature still, you know, resides in Santa Cruz, and in the street performers, musicians, and others, people selling their art who already are criminalized. But I do believe that that tourists come here for that. I mean, it does provide a unique ambiance that you don't find in many other towns. Although it's, you know, become more and more watered down, for sure.
Well,
but political activists as well. I mean, beyond the musicians, I don't know if the activists are a big attraction, but they need to have their rights too, you know.
I noticed that you were not too far from the coffee roasting company. You were parked in front of the Palomar Hotel with this table that you had. Nice display. I guess you'll be there again tomorrow, or nearby. I guess Jackson's Shoes is a little ways up from there.
Right.
But there was a kind of a, was he a celloist or a violinist, a classical musician?
He was a celloist, quite a good celloist. But
he was playing in front of the coffee roasting company, which was illegal.
Right.
Isn't illegal because of laws that are coming up on Tuesday. It's illegal because of laws that Kennedy and Coonerty and Rotkin and Matthews, old council members, passed way back in 1994 in order to stop both violinists and guitarists and people doing political tabling from tabling in front of cafes. And it doesn't matter how far away they are from the cafe. If they're between the cafe and the curb, that is illegal under what we call the Coonerty Cafe Law. That's after Neil Coonerty, the owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, who was also mayor of Santa Cruz in 1993 and a big backer of the anti-homeless downtown ordinances in 1994. One of those ordinances was that. Now, this celloist was violating the law, and I guess you or somebody else tried to encourage him to, suggest that he might want to look at the laws coming up on Tuesday, because they're going to make it hard for any musician, himself included, to legally play, as you pointed out, anywhere on, I guess it's the north side of Pacific Avenue, and on the south side, I'm not sure if it's east or the west, the Cinema 9 side of Pacific Avenue is going to be almost entirely ruled out. Otherwise, you'll be interfering with cars, getting in and out of cars on the, that are parked along the side.
Right.
But on the other side, the broad side, you will have stretches where there will be, I don't know, four to 6 feet for people to use, but then suddenly, every time a bench appears, you have to be 14 feet away from a bench. Every time a kiosk appears, you have to be 14 feet away from a kiosk. Every time a telephone or a drinking fountain appear, you have to be 14 feet away from those. And every time a crosswalk or a, not just a mid-block crosswalk, but the end of a block, you have to be 14 feet away from that, which doesn't make it a continuous strip at all. It makes it a series of isolated areas where you're allowed to be. And so you went and you talked to this celloist, or what happened with that?
Well, you know, it was pretty innocent. We were tabling. I saw him, and I'd had a conversation with him before, and it had been a good conversation with him before. But I walked over there, and you know, I gave him a bit of change, and also left him a copy of the new ordinances as well as a flyer about the kind of mini protest tomorrow in front of Jackson's Shoes, as well as the much larger one on Tuesday at the council meeting at 809 Center Street, 3 p.m. And so I left that flyer there, and he got a little flustered. He stopped playing his cello and became quite upset that I had left those materials there. And when I spoke to him and told him, well, these are things that are going to affect you. I mean, you're already, I mean, here right now, I did tell him that you're already illegal, but that you know, after these new ordinances, you'll have even less room. And he didn't seem to feel that that he was going to be criminalized. And I think, you know, he might not be. A lot of people, because he was well-dressed. By the police, so he might be right, but he also might be wrong. And as far as the law goes, he most certainly would be wrong. But he was very upset that that I left that flyer there and suggested that he might be criminalized.
And I was kind of upset to hear that he was upset, which is sort of foolish because everyone has a right to their opinion. But frankly, you know, I had a real kind of perverse impulse when I heard that what you told me, Jacob. My impulse was to go and make a citizen's arrest of him immediately, and to say, you know, you play a nice cello, but if you're going to show such utmost contempt or indifference toward, you know, the impact of these forthcoming ordinances on everybody up and down the mall, then I don't see why we should allow you, because the cafe likes your cello playing, to get away with this kind of shit. If I had gone to a police officer and said, "Officer, this man is violating this code. Have him move. I want to make either tell him to move, or even further, I want him to appear in court on an infraction charge right now." That to show him that anybody who wants to can now do that to him because of that law that was passed in 1994. And after on Tuesday, they can do that with all kinds of people up and down the mall. So the idea that you can blissfully rely on your little personal relationships with a few merchants, I think is, first of all, shows a complete lack of solidarity with fellow musicians and fellow poor people and fellow members of the community on the Pacific Avenue. But it's also rather short-sighted. I mean, it's, I guess some would call it realistic. They would say, well, you know, in these, just like, you know, in the days of Shakespeare and Elizabethan England, you had to get some favor from the people who were in power. So today, you've got to get favor from the merchants in order to survive in Santa Cruz. If you're that kind of person, you have to form these personal, special relationships, and that's all just how it goes. Of course, you know, that's one point of view. And I'm wondering, Jacob, you've been out there, you've been doing some talking with a lot of musicians. Mike True, the very well-regarded street musician who will, I guess, be suing the city civilly for its harassment and attacks and its arrests, its citations for displaying his CDs and his guitar music. He was doing some tabling today. Do you have any indication, is there a growing sense that musicians and street performers may want to stand together on this, or are people pretty much doing their individual, oh, I'm okay, Jack, I got my own deals with people? What's happened?
Well, of course there's been some crossover and a little of each, but I would say the majority of street musicians and performers, that, and mostly they have been musicians, that I have spoken with, first off, we're pretty aghast at these forthcoming ordinances, and many of them were quite enthusiastic about this initial or the larger demonstration on the 23rd at the City Hall. Of course, you know, we're quite unlikely that, as you pointed out, Robert, that they're going to really repeal any of these things at the second reading. But it's going to be a longer struggle, and we have been getting a lot of support and a lot of people signing a petition that we've got going around that Robert mentioned earlier. And so I think there will be a fair number of people at the demonstration on the 23rd, and I do think that solidarity is growing. It's really hard to quantify at this point, but
now, we talked earlier about how as I walked to the tabling this morning, you and I sort of did some tabling. You got there a little earlier than I did, and we set up a table. You set up a table in front of the Hotel Palomar. I walked down, I guess it was Locust Street, the street where the falafel place, 99 bottles of beer, is, and I passed two shops that had, one shop had a table with a bunch of merchandise on it at the curb directly in front of the store, and the other had a sandwich board display of a sign on the curb in front of the store. These stores were separated, I think, by one storefront. And I asked Officer Wendy Bynes, and you did too, what's the deal? Doesn't this violate, don't these signs and these merchandise tables block the sidewalk? Do they have permits? What's going on here? You know, it's a pretty narrow street. That's within 10 feet of a store. You might say, well, it's the merchants. They can do what they want. No, they can't do what they want unless they have specifically, you know, gotten a licensed area through a specific agreement with the city council. And I guess Officer Bynes seems to have a passion for going after excessive noise for people of color driving vehicles with loud radios. I heard that on three occasions in the last month. But not motorcyclists that I've heard. I haven't heard of Wendy doing any motorcycle ticketing with these horrible motorcycle rackets that blast your ears away. But she went back and she looked over the situation, and did she ticket those merchants or warn them or get them to move those displays? Do you know?
No, she did none of the above, and she's at least said that she was pretty unclear about what the real ordinances were, and I think all this stuff is really shaky. I mean, the kiosks that are on the sidewalk, I mean, the sidewalks were designated as public space, but yet that's private property on there. It's really quite shady, but the way it certainly appears now,
See why it's unclear, Jacob. It seems to me that the police officers walk around harassing poor people, but they're unclear on merchants so that they allow merchants to engage in placing obstructions on the sidewalk.
Right.
Hardly seems to be even-handed.
No, you're right. You're right. And that's the way.
Walk to the law library or go to the host's downtown informant center next to the Del Mar Theater. Open the city code book, read the code, and then walk over to the merchants and say, move the fucking sign or get a ticket, or else, okay, let's let that go, but let's also adopt a policy of tolerance generally for people in the city, because these laws are pretty stupid. Though actually, when you're dealing with commerce, to me that's a little bit different, because merchants who are regularly doing this to generate a profit and want to take over public space, to me, you know, I mean, that's a different situation than a person who's poor or a street artist or a street musician,
right,
who does so occasionally.
Well, yeah, and just to clarify, I said that at least she proclaimed that she was unclear, but, you know, what I said to her was that it seems pretty clear that the laws have been very selectively enforced, and that the merchants are the ones with the rights here, and the rest of us are the ones that are under that power, so...
You know, the real issue for the last couple of months hasn't been these stupid ordinances. It's been the police crackdown. And that, I think, is, and since you have to leave shortly, I understand, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what's on the agenda for Cop Watch tonight at Loudon Nelson at 8:30.
Well, at 8:30 we'll be meeting at the Loudon Nelson Park, and we've been trying to help facilitate getting a Cop Watch organized here, and we've had a few meetings, and we've been working to getting a website off the ground that's going to create kind of a profile history of some of the police with the most egregious records, and as well as, I mean, more importantly, and what has not really occurred yet, is to get people out on the beat, following the cops around, making reports, and just generally for people to carry around incident forms and have tape recorders, and, you know, provide advocacy for those that don't have it and are being hassled from the police for whatever reason, and create this kind of database and keep people informed about the police and more generally give out literature just so people know their rights and how to deal effectively with police in this situation.
Is there a number for people to call, Jacob, who can't make it to Cop Watch tonight at 8:30 at Loudon Nelson but would like to be involved?
Yeah, you know, right now we've just got pretty much one phone number. And I mean, we have some emails too. One phone number, which is mine, and that phone number is 831-596-2580.
Repeat the last seven digits.
596-2580.
596-2580.
Right.
Cool.
That is Cop Watch.
That's Cop Watch, and so folks can get involved. You'll get back to them.
Right. Absolutely.
An organizing session tomorrow prior to the Jackson protest, I should say the downtown ordinance protest in front of Jackson's Shoes at 2 o'clock. Is there an earlier meeting people should know about? Or?
Yeah, there is an earlier meeting. We'll be meeting at the Wired Wash Cafe adjacent to Saturn Cafe on Pacific, right off Pacific. We'll be meeting at 10 a.m. and just kind of going over exactly what we're going to be doing there. We've got a number of plans besides tabling. We're gonna a little bit of theatrics with people kind of muzzled as is the situation with our voices and our dissent to the new downtown ordinances. We have most certainly been muffled. There hasn't been adequate time for public input, and that's, you know, precisely what people in power want. And so we're gonna have some of that muzzling. So we encourage people to bring muzzles. We're also going to be starting a thing which we're going to carry further on the demonstration on the 23rd, where we're going to be representing we're going to be the merchant police walking up and down Pacific, giving people tickets on the things that will become illegal after these ordinances come through 30 days after the 23rd, things like tickets for leaning, and, you know, no liquid becoming airborne. So, you know, we may point to the absurdity, giving people tickets for sneezing and those types of things.
Well, I did attempt to tell the Palace Arts stationery people that they were engaging in criminal paraphernalia sales when I purchased, I have to admit this a little reluctantly, a bottle of bubble fluid.
Well, that's funny. Although, from what one of the council members was saying, they're going to make, or he at least suggested that they're going to make some special exemption for bubble blowing.
But only official bubble blowers who actually
professional bubble blowers.
We don't want amateurs. You know, I mean, don't try this at home.
So these are permitted bubble blowers then.
Bubble heads are going to be essentially decriminalizing this for official bubble blowers. You know, the big bubble man with the huge.
So the bureaucratic bubble blowers can maintain.
They would blow in their bubbles no matter what we do, I'm afraid. As time goes on, I guess your number is also the number to call, as well as the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you want to get involved with Downtown for All, is that a good idea? Or?
Yeah, no, yeah, that number can definitely be used. There's also you can email, and I'm, you know, I'm just giving out my contacts because I don't know who else is to use. Nobody else has really said that they would be into that. I want to make clear that I'm just helping organize and facilitate, and that I'm certainly not a leader of any of this. This is a community effort, and it should be looked at as such. But as far as an email that you can get to keep in touch, you can contact it's JACKSONBROWN letter O at Yahoo. So that's JacksonBrownO@yahoo.com. You can email there. And yeah, but sorry, Robert, I'm gonna have to be leaving now. I'm a little late for some other stuff I got to do.
Yeah, you got cop watching and bubble blowing and who knows what else to do. I guess
yeah,
people
well
can catch up with you tomorrow.
You gotta have your slack too, you know.
Yeah, a little slack time is always, you know. Praise Bob, as we say.
Praise Bob, right? Thank you, Robert.
Hey, thank you, Jake.
And you're on free radio.
Yeah, I want to know his email again.
His email is jacksonbrowno@yahoo.com.
BROWNO
at yahoo.com.
Cool.
There you go.
Rock on.
All righty.
Ciao.
Thank you.
And I hope that went out over the air. That caller wanted to get the jacksonbrowno@yahoo.com email. Let's remind you that our phone number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And hey, I see a little note posted on the wall. Hey, Uncle Dennis, happy birthday. But it looks like that may have been some time ago. So whenever it was, happy birthday, Uncle Dennis. Uncle Dennis does a daily 5 minutes at 5:30 every day here on Free Radio, Earth First Updates. And he also does Earth First News, actually. And he also does a show after mine at 8 o'clock tonight, a show that is from the cream to the dregs, not-so-familiar music from the 60s and 70s. Other shows that I think that those who listen to my show might be interested in are the Steve Argue show. I think it's called Liberation News, if I'm not mistaken, and that's from 8 to 10 on Saturday mornings. Then at 10:30 on Saturday mornings, you make your way to 332 Dakota Street, apartment B. You can hook up with the Steve Argue for City Council campaign, and I'm always ragging Steve to get more resources, and sometimes actually helping get a few resources. I should learn to be more helpful and less raggy. And if you want to help him out, that's the place to go. He's got the only campaign in town worth supporting at the moment. Although I guess Nate Kennedy is putting together a campaign. That's the Chalking Man. And haven't seen Nate's platform. I like some of his street actions. I have to check that out as I see it coming up. And I've heard that other people are planning to put together election campaigns as the election season opens, which is going to be happening very soon. I guess for the next month soon there's going to be election stuff going on. You'll be able to file election papers. And I'll be talking about that probably next week after the infamous Doom City Council meeting of Doom on Tuesday. I'm going to call it Terrorist Tuesday 3. Three strikes and we're out. That's what I'm afraid is going to happen, but at least maybe it'll kick off a campaign, not just to let City Council know that a rushed process that gives us even worse downtown ordinances is not to be tolerated, but that we will essentially declare we're not going to allow the original downtown ordinances to stand, that they're a violation of basic human rights. And I'll talk about some of the historical parallels with abolitionists saying that slavery is wrong, with women violating laws that enforce patriarchy and male supremacy, and similarly with people of color violating laws that essentially proclaim and exalt white supremacy. The laws downtown, the current laws, that make it illegal to sit on the sidewalk 10 feet from a store, even if you're not obstructing the sidewalk, violate basic human rights. You might say they're simply time, place, and manner that helps the flow of traffic. No, they're not. They're used by the police to harass a particular class of people. To me, that is a fairly well-established fact. They're differentially and selectively enforced. And that, of course, is the real story that we have to continue to follow in this whole situation. That's why Cop Watch at 8:30 tonight is so important. Loudon Nelson Center, show up there if you can. I don't even know if I'm going to be there because I'm pooped after having done a significant amount of tabling. And you know, but who knows? Maybe I will. It's worth going to. I'm certainly going to be supporting it. Let's hear a little bit now from the downtown, from the earlier interviews today that I was able to pick up from folks coming up to the table, the Downtown for All table in front of the Hotel Palomar. The day before at the Farmers Market, there was a lot of people who signed up, a lot of people concerned about the anti-homeless downtown ordinance worsening that's going to be happening on Tuesday. And there were some more. I think we got a total of like 200, 250 signatures now, which is more than the merchants have in terms of their Candy Jackson petition. But of course, just as our showing of concern about police harassment was far and away, had the largest number of concerned votes at the Emily Riley downtown issues meetings, and that made no difference to City Council. They completely ignored the issue, as did Emily Riley and Ed Porter. So our petition will probably mean little to them, but to the community it may mean something. And I begin to see people coming out of the woodwork that don't want to see downtown sanitized, and the red lights are beginning to start flashing here, and the alarm bells are starting to ring, and the phone's ringing.
Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Turn down your radio if you can. Alrighty. So, how are you doing today?
Good.
Oh, okay. So, what's cooking?
Oh, I had a poetry line I wanted to say, but...
Go for it.
Justice triumphs in the end. Pisces and High Priestess are the best of friends. That's just one quote.
Uh-huh.
That's an interesting thing. What do I mean by that? And then we've got...
In the sea of our bodies, our sisterhood floats above all the wreckage, the men and their moats. Hello.
All right. Well, listen, I will we'll pass that on.
I think you could use it.
Okay.
Okay, ciao.
Thank you.
Bye.
And for other poets and callers, 427-3772. While I'm waiting for the flood of calls, and remember, you can always show up tomorrow at 2 o'clock in front of Jackson's Shoes for the educational and agitational protest, which is, I guess, there are a couple of things that have been considered. I understand somebody has purchased a tape measure, and there are plans to check out the sidewalk at different points to see just how much space is really left for people with tables or people who want to play music or people who want to put down a blanket and read tarot cards or people who just want to sit down, see what actually the real situation is. You get one story from the cops, you get another story from Ed Porter, I give you a third story, and, you know, what's the reality of it? Well, we'll find out tomorrow, 2 o'clock, and if you want to help prepare this protest, 10 o'clock at Wired Wash Cafe, and I guess probably thereafter for the next few hours is going to be some prep going on there. So check it out.
He left and she left, and he left with a roar, typical Harley noise, and that was it.
Thank you, Jim.
Shortly after that, I witnessed the bicycle being extracted from the park, from the farmer's market.
Yeah, that was an incident.
So, yesterday at the farmer's market, I actually got several reports. I guess you saw the same, or saw part of the same incident, a certain part of it.
I saw the end of it.
Where these three female officers, I guess perhaps Wendy was one of them.
No, Wendy wasn't. They were shorter. They were all shorter. They were all about the same size. One had red hair with freckles. One had blonde hair tied back in a ponytail. And the other one was brown hair, but I don't know how she had her hair fixed. I can't remember. They came out of the park with a bicycle. I said, that's not an officer.
You don't mean
a
park. You mean out of the parking lot.
I mean, parking lot.
Next to the farmer's market.
No, they came through the farmer's market out of the parking lot.
And in fact, apparently they told people it was an unattended bicycle. I talked to the man whose bicycle it was. He was very upset that they'd taken it. They also told someone that you couldn't have a dog in the parking lot because the parking lot, this is again a secondhand story. I should ask Wendy.
Yeah,
she's left.
I asked you if that dog was on a rope. I believe it was.
They told her that, I don't know. Yes, it was. It was on a leash. And they told the dog person that that they couldn't be there because that area was either a part of the mall or a part of the farmer's market, which it is neither, so I don't know what she was talking about.
Right, the people were having their meal there. They had
food not bombs.
Right. And then the three female...
And what that was, to interject into this tape, was, of course, part of the harassment and surveillance of the food not bombs meal, which is becoming increasingly definitive. I ran into Candlelight Kim Argula, as I call her. Kim is an old-time Food Not Bomber who actually, along with Tony Mello and Brian Koepke and Skidmark Bob Duran and others, helped begin Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz back in the early 90s, some years after we had started SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, and Keith McHenry had brought down Food Not Bombs from San Francisco. There was massive attacks on Food Not Bombs and SWAP by the local authorities. We went to jail, we fought back, and they finally decided to leave us alone. Though they passed an injunction against Food Not Bombs, which we have ignored ever since. In fact, it may have lapsed. I'm not sure. It was passed in 1992 or 93, and I don't know if it was made permanent or lapsed, but in any case, it's never been enforced. But now the health department, according to Kim Argula, was snooping around. Brian Koepke also reported this. And by the way, the new Food Not Bombs number, for those who want it, I'll give you that in a moment. And so there's some concern that these depredations at the farmer's market, where Food Not Bombs is actually not at the farmer's market, but next to it in the parking lot where Food Not Bombs serves and some drummers and musicians play, and it's in the public parking lot. That's not the farmer's market, and it certainly is not the mall, so I don't know what Officer Bynes was supposedly talking about, or the officers who told that woman she could not have her dog on a leash there and directed her to move, and I don't know what they were talking about, except it seems, again, there seems to be harassment of Food Not Bombs going on, and part of an increased police crackdown on the mall. And that's one of the real problems of these new ordinances. They empower the police to act further. And they don't go after bad behavior, where we're talking about rape, assault, theft, property damage. They go after the freedom of people to use public spaces where other people would just rather not see those people in the public spaces at all, or at least as little as possible. And that's, you know, doing things like sitting, or peacefully panhandling, or associating, or even playing that vicious, dangerous sport, hacky sack, you know, which is also going to be criminalized under the upcoming ordinances unless enough people come down there and just say no to city council. And presumably city council can act anyway, but I think if enough people show up, they might take a second look at the whole thing. One of the problems, and the main problems, is this is all a backroom deal. This has all been done in the face of massive public opposition through a seemingly back channel that the merchants have. And the process has been rushed. The process has ignored traditional requirements where they're supposed to give people at public hearings 3 minutes to speak and organizations 5 minutes when you're dealing with an ordinance change. I was promised that by Mayor Crone on Tuesday morning before I went into the city council. And when I got there, I didn't get 5 minutes for the Huff organization. I got 1 minute. And individuals didn't get 3 minutes. They got 2 minutes. And it seemed that nothing they said made any difference, because even though the overwhelming majority of testimony was against these ordinances, and actually to change the existing ordinances so they would be really respecting basic rights and also addressing the real problems that the merchants say they have. We could actually sit down and figure out what the problems are, maybe set up codes of conduct, use mediation, get social workers and other folks who have some expertise involved in the specifics. All of that was just ignored, except there was a social worker who was assigned to the mall. I guess that they'd had one that was supposed to be there, and she was dropped, or he was dropped, and now they're back again, and that's fine. But the whole impetus back in 1995, which city council at least funded to the tune of $10,000 to have two mediators do some real serious investigation, was to look into the question of codes of conduct by the different groups of people and some real process of reconciliation, where there might be a meeting of the minds instead of one group using the police to beat the other group over the head. That's, of course, the merchants using the police to beat everybody else over the head, is pretty much what it boils down to. Now, I know it may sound ironic, and I may sound like I'm beating on the poor merchants' heads with this, because when I've talked to merchants, they give me this line, and I don't think it's just a line, this concern, this perspective, that they feel completely ignored by city council and not really served by the police force. You know, that their businesses are suffering, that, you know, some of their oldest customers are telling them that they won't come downtown with their families because they feel uncomfortable or afraid or subject to harassment. But frankly, because, and Candy Jackson herself, and caller, I'm going to answer you in a moment, so keep ringing. Candy Jackson said to me, I don't really want law changes, I want to keep the traditional downtown but deal with some of the problems. Yet all of these merchants, to a person, endorsed these laws. So, as far as I'm concerned, if they don't want to talk about the real issues and they want to pass more bogus laws, then they are not addressing the issue. Instead, they're criminalizing homeless people, and they have to be essentially held accountable for that.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Hungry at Sasquatch.com, and pardon the feedback.
Okay.
Robert, you've really done a great job of promoting the interest of the homeless, which is the interest, as you pointed out, of all children, of everybody. You know, the fact that we live in a monopoly game world and are kind of like looking the other direction with tunnel vision, you know, is something that we don't see now, but people will see soon, and you're right there in the forefront saying, hey, this stuff's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to say, I think I mentioned to you earlier that, you know, in the 70s, I saw Beach Street on a Saturday with bumper-to-bumper traffic stopped.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Santa Cruz is so full of tourists. And now, the businesses have been cracking down. They've illegalized camping on the beaches since then. And now we just hear about murders on the beaches. You know?
Mm-hmm.
What we got the murder on the river after they cleared everyone out. You know, we've got like 1/10 the tourist population we could have because of just the hate and division, which all of our enemy wants to sow within us. They want to divide us. They want to make us fight with each other instead of caring about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate your efforts and your insight about what's going on.
Well, you know, I appreciate your historical perspective. I'd like to... There was an interesting letter in this week's Metro. I don't know if you saw it. Metro Santa Cruz, are you in town?
Yeah, of course, of course.
I mean, it was interesting for a number of reasons. First, it was interesting because it had 800 words, and they usually will not print any letters over 300 words, so they apparently thought that it was okay.
Don't get me started on that.
Right. But this was an interesting letter from someone who had worked with the claim that the street person study of the mid-80s commissioned out of the UCSC gave some interesting alternate solutions or ideas about how to deal with or what the nature of the concerns were, that the concerns that the merchants are now voicing about sexual harassment downtown, people verbally being offensive who are panhandling and not getting money.
I've suffered through it all. I know all about it.
Right. I'm interested in this historical perspective, first of all, because it's just a perverse interest in history, but also because I think it bears on our present situation. I mean, this is the first time I've heard that there's been a major drop in tourist traffic from the 70s, for example. In fact, one of the things...
God.
Is that right?
Are you kidding?
I am naive about these
things. No, I mean, we have so many more people here. This place, San Jose, would, like, vacate and come to Santa Cruz on the weekends in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 4 Mile Beach, there were concerts on the beach every weekend. Everybody parked on every available parking space from here to Davenport.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And with the issue is we need to address real crimes.
Yeah.
If a person is really doing something that is really injurious to somebody else, we need to address that issue. But we all have to be tolerant too. You know, if we see somebody who's a little bit out of it, I tolerate a lot of... I used to be dread walking down the Pacific Mall because I get spare change by 2,000 people. I only have a couple dollars on me, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
I mean, I'm exaggerating. I always do. Hyperbolizing, pardon me.
Right.
But the point is, and I know that there are things that really alarm people, and we need to be considerate of the things that people are alarmed by. And I've been a hippie for a long time. I know that some people are considerate and some people aren't. I think that what we need to do is start looking at those people who are not considerate.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who are really causing the problems, who are being the agent provocateurs.
I have a scandal to tell, but I won't.
I gotcha.
Anyhow, Robert, I think I've done as much of a soliloquy as I'm ready for.
Well, hey, keep it up and keep me advised.
Hey, well, you got my email.
All right, well, come on down to...
Hungry@Sasquatch.com.
All right. I hear a voice in the background. I mean, come on down to the protest tomorrow at 2:00, and
in front of
Jackson Shoes, yeah. Check out also the protest at 3:00 on Tuesday in front at City Hall.
We'll all be there.
All right. Well, bring as many people as you can, and keep
cameras
listening.
Cameras and tape recorders and
hands. Dig it.
Journals.
All right.
Unite.
Thank you.
Fighters unite. Blood money comes now.
And thank you, caller, for that call, and you have phone lines open again for those of you who want to call at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. If you want to call City Council about any of this silly stuff, 420-5017 is the number, 420-5017. Can't make it down to the protest, going to leave town perhaps, fed up with putting any energy into the council other than maybe a quick phone call, well, you can do that, 420-5017. No on the ordinances. And certainly no on the bad process. Even SCAN members, Santa Cruz Action Network people, who I have not got a lot of good things to say about in the last couple years because of their vicious dissolution of their housing committee, because of their mad and blind support for the Dolphin Lee Project. I'm talking about the people on the SCAN steering committee, Bernice Belton, Nora Hockman, people like that. who claim to know, you know, be in touch with concerns of poor and working people, and often are. But in this case, they were simply knee-jerk supporters of Mercy Charity's housing and were interested in criminalizing or in, not criminalizing, in excluding a whole bunch of activists who thought otherwise, myself, Becky Johnson, Green Party members, Huff members. They dissolved the housing committee in a secret meeting. Nonetheless, these folks came to City Council on Tuesday, and they presented a letter from the SCAN Steering Committee, which I should probably try to find and read, because it was quite a letter, and it Bob Guzley, who presented the letter, was not able to read the whole letter, because, and this is one of the big problems at this meeting, the City Council refused to allow time. And I may have, I think I'll be hopefully be reading that on Sunday. I don't have it with me. But the SCAN Steering Committee, in essence, not only said these laws criminalize homeless people, but we don't even have time to look at them in a clear and sober way and bring them to the rest of the membership, because you are rushing so fast to get these things through before August that there's just no time. It's just extremely bad. It's no way to conduct a public process. If you want to have your own little private deal, if this is some sort of backdoor corporate boardroom you're running, then I guess that's the way it goes. But if you're claiming to be a city council that represents the voters and that takes issues to the public, well, you're not doing that. And that is that was impressive to hear from SCAN. I was also impressed to hear Bernice Belton and Nora Hochman arguing persistently with Ed Porter and with Tim Fitzmaurice and with other council members, I guess those two particularly, outside the council meeting. And I was shocked. Well, they tried to point out to him that these laws will be used to go after poor people. They will not be used to go after middle-class people. They won't. I mean, I saw a guy walking at one of these German attack dogs on the mall today. It wasn't a German Shepherd. It was another kind of dog. Nice dog. Look, a puppy. I don't think he was a dangerous dog. But this was, you know, fellow nicely dressed, obviously not a homeless person, or certainly didn't seem to be. And he was just, you know, walking his dog right down the mall, this big dog, and he didn't get bothered by the police. Now, admittedly, I didn't see any police around, but, and there is pretty much selective enforcement of a series of laws on the mall, ranging from sitting down on the lip of a planter, which often happens, and around the coffee roasting company, it happens all the time. People don't get hassled for it, but let it happen to, you know, a political activist or a homeless guitarist. Somebody tries to throw breadcrumbs down, you know, at a Food Not Bombs meal, hey, they end up with $50,000 a bail, as Norman Friedberg did, and getting beat up by the police. Even if he resists arrest and really did resist arrest, why arrest this person in the first place? Why create this kind of hassle? There's a process of selectively enforcing the laws. We've asked the Citizens Police Review Board to look into it. I've called Mark Half Moon. I haven't heard a word back from him in terms of trying to get any hearings going on that. I think that the City Council needs to direct the Citizens Police Review Board to hold those hearings. I've told you often I don't think much of the CPRB, still don't. But the real issue has to do with whether the community wants to take back power, and I'm hoping that's what we're going to be doing in the next few months, taking back the power, because I think there is a real reservoir of support for a genuinely inclusive downtown. I mean, after all, that's the line that the merchants are using. They're saying that the behavior of people sitting on the sidewalk, acting rudely, blocking people's way, playing hacky sack, leaning against buildings is creating a climate which makes it impossible for everybody to be included, notably older residents who live in the El Centro and the Palomar and the St. George, as well as older customers, sometimes younger customers of some of the businesses who claim that they were harassed or panhandled or treated rudely or a series of complaints of that sort. And I felt that we had a really good start in discussing these issues at the Riley Porter meetings, but they turned out that those meetings were not really intended for that purpose at all. They were a cover to allow the police chief to put together ordinances that not only gave Candy Jackson pretty much what she wanted from her petition, but went much further essentially criminalizes virtually all political tabling and all street performing downtown. Now, maybe they're gone further so they can do this little coup and say, oh, here, we'll give half of it back to you. Now, be happy and go home. No, we need to remove every single downtown ordinance that isn't really related to genuine safety and health concerns. And sitting near a shop, provided you're not blocking an entrance or the road, has nothing to do with any legitimate public health concerns. These are anti-homeless gentrification laws that came directly out of Seattle, as I said to reporter Dan White today when he came by the Downtown for All table, and of course he nodded and ignored me, of course. And they don't deserve to stand in a city of our kind. And they also have this really genuinely counterproductive effect, that they allow police to go after and harass people because of their status and because of their nature of part of a class, not because of really what they're doing. And you say, well, they're, you know, they are conduct laws. They have to do with the fact that you're sitting down on the sidewalk. It doesn't mean if you're black or white or rich or old, you're sitting down, you're going to get a ticket or you should be moved on. No. There's certain kinds of people who do sit on the sidewalk because they don't have the money to go to the cafes. Or it's a different kind of culture where the people who sit on the sidewalk are the kinds of folks who do that because they are engaging in a kind of an open interaction which doesn't necessarily involve the culture of commerce. And to go after that is a form of kind of a cultural imperialism, too, where what you're doing is saying, you can come into our stores and spend money, but keep walking, you know. Don't lean against a building. Don't sit down except at a bench or a street cafe or at one of the 12 spots on the mall where you'll have 3 feet from the curb to sit. And then be careful you don't sit 14 feet from a bench or 14 feet from a kiosk. I mean, we went through this absurdity in 1994, and I guess we're going to go through it again. It's just too bad. We've got better things to do. We really need to sit down and talk with merchants about their real concerns, because whether it's good or bad, I kind of like these merchants. I don't like what they do, but I like them as people. I sat down and talked to John Lesher, and I like John Lesher. I mean, I don't know. I'm interested in the history of what's happened here in town. I'm interested in what his concerns are. I would like to see local businesses succeed, but I'll damn well boycott them to death if they're going to start criminalizing people on the streets because of their status. And I'll tell you, I think the businesses are behind keeping the sleeping ban in place. And I think that if they're not behind it, they're allowing the police department to do it. And I've often said, one of the weakest links in the city council police department chain is the businesses. Once we go after the businesses to let them know this is not permissible, we're going to make this town a national scandal for criminalizing homeless people, then we'll get somewhere.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
Hey there, Scott.
How you doing?
I'm good. Looks like you've been listening to the show, perhaps?
For the last half hour or so.
All right. Well, give us your thoughts. We haven't heard from you in, gosh, a couple of months.
Well, I think, personally, as far as businesses go downtown, their biggest problem is that they close, most of them close at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Most people that have money, most families or couples, whether they're married or unmarried, both people work. The husband and the wife, or the man and the woman, both work. Mm-hmm. They get off work at 5. It takes them an hour to get home. They get home at 6 o'clock. The stores are all closed downtown. The only place they can shop is Capitola Mall.
Mm-hmm.
So if these businesses want to make more money, stay open until 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock. They probably make more money between 6 o'clock at night and 9 o'clock at night than they do the rest of the day.
Well, have you ever brought this issue to any of the downtown associations? I know that the Downtown Association holds regular meetings. Now they have to hold them publicly. Is there some rationale for not keeping stores open late downtown Santa Cruz?
I think most of the store owners are cheap, and they don't want to have to pay employees to work those extra 3 hours.
Now, is it cheap, or is it fair to say that it's hard for the store owners to keep a living, considering that commercial rents are up there along with the rest of the rents?
Well, the problem is that, you know, I mean, if they want to make more money, they should be open when the people that have money can shop. Capitola Mall is packed at night. During the middle of the day, you know, there's a lot of people there, but there's not a lot. But if you ever go there at night, the place is packed.
Now,
the parking lot is full.
When I talked to John Lesher the other day, he was telling me that the Pacific Garden Mall by Rydell and who was the other fellow? There were two kind of geniuses behind the mall who put it together, the original Garden Mall back
right.
in the 60s, it was a response to the Capitola Mall. They had to do something to stop the draw, so they created this dramatic new mall, which was a garden mall with a road through it. Apparently that was the big deal. It was a winding road that other malls failed, according to John Lesher, who's not a big fan of pedestrian plazas, obviously, because there was no place for vehicles. I'm really interested in the history of this. I'm really interested in the dialogue that might happen between merchants and other people with the kinds of considerations you raise. But, instead we get this crappy ordinance fix, which is, to me, necessarily produces polarization. I mean, it certainly polarizes me. What's your feeling about these laws?
Well, I think it's overkill myself. I mean, this whole 14 or 12 feet, it's just going to put everybody on one side of the street. And so the merchants on that side of the street are going to start screaming bloody murder once they realize that they're the side of the street all the street people have to hang out on. And it doesn't, to me it infringes on people's rights. People have a right to panhandle. That's been upheld by the Supreme Court. You have the right to panhandle. Now the city council is coming in and abridging that right, saying you can only panhandle in this 1 3-square-inch area, every 78 feet. And, it's just absurd.
Well, it's also true.
I mean, to me, the 10-foot rule that they put in, what was it, back in 94 or whatever?
Yeah.
That was too much, And these new rules go even way, way overboard, as far as I'm concerned.
Interestingly enough, when I talked to reporter Dan White, he told me that not only is City Council planning, they're clearly planning to pass these laws on Tuesday, but they also have a committee that's been meeting kind of out of the public eye about decorum at City Council. I don't know if you've been aware of those meetings, Scott.
No, I had no idea that there was any decorum. I'm sure that this is headed up by Fuhrer Fitzmaurice.
Former Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, if you don't mind.
Still a Fuhrer.
Well, he's sort of the Fuhrer behind the curtain. We don't want to, spoil Chris Krohn's spotlight. But
if you watch Krohn in action, either Kennedy or Fitzmaurice is telling him what to do constantly. I mean, the guy doesn't have a backbone as far as being mayor goes. He should be running the show. He shouldn't be doing the bidding of these two clowns, but he is constantly.
Yeah, it's true. In fact, as I mentioned, he called me on the day of the last city council meeting, Tuesday, and told me that I would be allowed to speak 5 minutes for Huff, the